Welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC. So a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It is a great way to stay informed about all of the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I'd like to introduce you to Getacho Tedes, who is doing a PhD in rehabilitation science under the supervision of Professor Heather Aldersley. Welcome to Grad Chat.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And before we dive into your research, I'd love to know a little bit about what brought you to Queen's in the first place. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to getting here?
Okay. Yeah, I am an international student. I am from Ethiopia. When I was in Ethiopia, I was a university lecturer in the University of Gondar. So in School of Social Work in the University of Gondar. And then I have been involved in disability-related advocacy. That means I was teaching in higher education institution, but at the same time, I worked in disability-related areas to advocate for persons with disabilities. So at that time, there is a collaborative project that has been implemented between Queen's University and the University of Gondar. It is called MasterCard Foundation Scholars Program. So this program was supporting the higher education, University of Gondar staffs to get education opportunities abroad. So as part of that, I got the privilege to get this education opportunity to pursue my PhD in rehabilitation science.
Oh, very nice. I'm glad you were able to join Queen's, and we're excited to have you here to learn more about the research you've been doing that's informed by years of teaching and practice and advocacy work before even starting this project. So your research topic is titled The Role of Community-Based Rehabilitation Programming in Enabling Formal and Natural Supports for Persons with Disabilities and Their Families in Ethiopia. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means? Or can you tell us, I guess, a brief summary of your project?
Yeah, this research is mainly... It is an international project led by my supervisor, Heather Aldersley, and this project is conducted in 7 different countries.
Wow.
This project is funded by the SHERC, that is Social Science and Humanities Research Council Canada. So as part of this project, I got the privilege to conduct a study in one of the case study of the 7 countries in Ethiopia. So in Ethiopia case, I conducted my research to understand the natural support experiences of people with disabilities and their caregivers, and at the same time, how organizations enable formal and natural support for this population. So just to make it clear for our discussion, what does it mean, formal and natural support?
Yes, I definitely don't know.
Formal support is the support provided by professionals, mainly paid support and services provided by the government. And natural support is unpaid support provided by families, friends, and neighbors. This is mainly provided because of love, network, and loyalty that individuals have within the community members. So based on this, I tried to investigate the natural support experience of those people with disability and also the natural support experience of their caregivers and how the University of Gondar community-based rehabilitation programming enabling formal and natural supports for this population.
Oh, very, very interesting. I can imagine how your research would have to investigate many different places and organizations that provide this and many different people who provide different types of support. So you mentioned that there were multiple studies in your dissertation.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those studies and what the goals of each of those were?
Yeah. The first study is understanding the natural support experience of people with disabilities. So I interviewed 12 persons with disabilities, and also nine neighbors. Neighbors means that the people who live around the living residence of those people with disabilities. So this study is mainly understand to what extent that those people with disabilities are receiving natural supports from their neighbors, their friends and family members. At the same time, what are the challenges that they experience in accessing these natural supporters, and how those natural supports could be leveraged, promoted in the community to support those persons with disabilities, in addition to the formal supporters that are expected to be provided for people with disabilities. So I interviewed this total of 19 individuals. So based on this, identified the type of supporters that people with disabilities are received from those neighbors, friends and family members, and also how those supporters will be more strengthened in the community to provide the supporters to people with disabilities.
So within that first study, what were some of the findings that you found from your conversations with your participants?
Yeah, so the major findings are those people with disabilities are receiving from these neighbors, friends and families related with the basic needs, that is the food support, the financial supports that the neighbors and friends provide for those people with disabilities. And also those individuals with disabilities who are currently or at that time attending their schools, also they receive educational support. That means materials, educational materials for those people with disabilities, especially those people with disabilities experience economic challenges. So because of this, they have a challenge of affording those education materials. So these neighbors, friends, and family members provide for those people this education materials and also the emotional supports that they received from their natural support providers. And one of the most important findings here is also information and advocacy. That means the neighbors and families or friends of those people with disabilities provide information as where the supporters are available for those people with disabilities in order to access them. And also, especially those people with disabilities who have mobility problems, have limited information as what are the supporters available in the community, especially in the government side, the formal supporters. So those people are, I found that they identify those information and provide for those people with disabilities to seek supporters for them. And also advocate for the people with disabilities. For in the local government, there are neighbors who advocate for those people with disability that the administration, that means the lowest administrative level of the community, should provide those people with disabilities. Related with this, those persons with disabilities are not the only recipients of the services. Rather, I found that those people with disabilities themselves also provide support for these community members, for their natural support providers. That means the support is reciprocal. So based on the capacity that those persons with disabilities has, they provide support for their friends, their neighbors, and their family members. So this is the most important thing, that support is reciprocal. That means not always they expect support from others. Rather, there is a way of mutual support between these people with disabilities and their natural support providers.
So, yeah, it sounds like family, friends, neighbors, the community provides kind of wraparound supports for everyday life, but also explaining some of the supports that their friends or family members who have disabilities might need to other people in the community who don't know that person personally, but that also that the folks who are receiving this type of support from their community also give back in many different ways, although it might look different based on their capacity. And that's okay. So that's very, very interesting to hear, and also quite reassuring to know that people are receiving this really holistic support and are, like you said, it's reciprocal. It's not one. It's not one directional. This type of support.
In addition, here, for example, one of the gaps that identified related with those studies is, of course, there are has been different studies conducted on persons with disabilities and their caregivers, but usually I found that what are the challenges there? The stigma, discrimination population of the person with disabilities are experiencing mm. in the community, rather than identifying the other sides of the community, the assets, the resources mm-hmm. that the community could provide for those people with disabilities. So this study is come up with one of the most important findings, that the society, even though there is a stigma, discrimination, and challenges that person with disability experience in the society, but still there are resources that we need to build on that, that they provide supporters for those people with disabilities.
Yeah, so there's, like, it sounds like you're identifying positives and gaps, but also how to leverage those positives that are already happening in support of just creating something new. It's adding to what already exists.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really exciting. So that is one of your studies.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about some of your other studies and what their goals were?
Yeah, the second studies is how those understanding the caregivers' experience regarding these natural supports. Usually caregivers' need and support needs are ignored or overlooked by providing much attention to the person with disabilities. So in reality, those caregivers also need care.
Mm-hmm.
They need support. So how those also caregivers also accessing these natural supporters in the community, how these community members, such as their friends, their own friends, their family members and their neighbors provide a natural support for caregivers. So in this study also, I interviewed 12 caregivers and 9 neighbors, totally 19 individuals. So the primary caregivers of those persons with disabilities as well receiving different supporters from the community. So one of the major supporters that they receive was respite care. Mm. That means providing care for their children with disability is time demanding. So they need sometimes, especially in our context, there are different social responsibilities in the community during the happiness or the bad times that in the neighborhoods or in the community, they need to go out for even to generate income. Since they need sometimes away from caring for those children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I found that their neighbors and their friends are supporting, providing them respite care. That means providing care for their children for sometimes until they come back from their short-time responsibilities in the community. The other thing is sharing responsibilities through providing material and financial needs of those caregivers. Those caregivers experience financial problem because of providing caregiving responsibilities for their children with disabilities. Some of them are unemployed and some of them are engaging in some income generating activities, but it is insufficient to the family members. So at this time, the extended families are contributing financial supporters or material supporters to those caregivers in order to cover the expenses of their children with disabilities in terms of providing like education material supporters during the school times and also providing food for the family because of that financial problem. So in general, this sharing responsibilities towards the expenses or the needs of their children with disabilities is the other support. And there is a stigma and discrimination in the community even against caregivers of children with disabilities. So they need emotional support. So I found that emotional support was also the most critical support that they receive from their neighbors, because I have seen their story that they have been discriminated or stigmatized by the community. Even they don't share anything in the neighborhood because they have a children with disability. But gradually, due to different interventions, and I will talk about this in the third study, but due to different interventions or awareness creations, those community members provide emotional support that they accept those caregivers and they accept their children with disabilities. This was a big relief for those caregivers because it is accepted by their neighbors accepted by their community members and even accepted by their landlords. Even that means when they rent a house, they struggle a lot of challenges because of their children with disabilities. But when they access supporters, that means acceptances from their landlords, the community members, their friends, and the neighbors, it is a lot of emotional supports for them. And finally, similar with the first study, there is also still advocacy and information support for their caregivers, where they can access supports for them and their children with disabilities in the community. So especially those neighbors who accept those caregivers advocate for those caregivers to get access or support us in the community. Yeah, these are some of the major findings from the second study.
Oh, it sounds, again, similarly very holistic in the supports that people are providing to caregivers. So I know in other contexts I've heard of caregiver burnout before and that type of term. So it sounds like the support network of the caregivers tries to avoid this by doing things like, I don't know if in this context, but you said food support. So maybe that's dropping off groceries for the week, or bringing a meal that's already been cooked, or bringing leftovers to next door when they know that they've got additional responsibilities with childcare for a child with a disability. Or, like you said, educational supplies. Would that be things like buying school uniforms or notebooks and that, giving those types of things when, when needed? And then doing advocacy, like explaining to landlords that modifying the house temporarily or permanently is okay because it's needed for, that's just what that child needs to live on a day-to-day basis. And the community acceptance that comes with that makes those types of requests easier. Is that, would that be an example of something that you notice, those types of things?
Here, in those studies, that what I was trying to understand, what was the reasons that those community members, their friends, families, and neighbors are supporting those people with disabilities and their caregivers. Even though there are those caregivers and people with disabilities, they had experience of stigma and discrimination or challenges, but still the culture, our culture promotes interdependence. We don't have just individualistic lifestyle, rather the people around there living together, they support each other. The culture values this, supporting each other is one of the culture, and also there is a religious aspect there. That means they believe religiously that they are ordered to support others who need support from those individuals. So in order to fulfill these religious requirements, even those people are interested to support those people with disabilities. And also I found that they have sense of responsibility because they are their neighbors, because they are their community members, their friends, their family members. So based on this, they develop a sense of responsibilities to support those caregivers and the people with disabilities as much as they can because of that initiative, the responsibility that they have developed. So those are some of the reasons that they mentioned that allowed them to support those people with disabilities and their caregivers.
Well, that sounds very robust in your finding. It sounds very, very deep. You've got a lot of data to work with, it sounds like. And you also did another study, though. So can you tell us about your third study as well?
Yeah, the third study, okay. In the first and in the second studies, I understand their experiences. But those experiences need to be promoted, need to be leveraged in the society. So I tried to understand how organizations enable this natural supporters and formal supporters for those people with disability and their caregivers. So I use as the case study of the University of Gondar community-based rehabilitation programming. So how this program enable informal, I mean, the natural supporters and formal supports for those people. So I found that in two aspects, they promoted or enabled the formal supporters through two basic things. The first one is collaboration. This collaboration is focusing on working together with any partners, any organizations, including the community members. So partnering with those people with disability themselves, those caregivers, the community members, and governmental and non-governmental organizations, starting from the local to the national level. So this is one approach they use to promote these formal supporters for people with disabilities. Especially this formal support is a backbone that sometimes the natural supports alone will not fulfill the needs of people with disabilities. They need the formal supports, the services from the government side. So the government, they advocate to those people with disabilities and their families to influence the government to provide services for these people in that local area. And also this collaboration helped them, this CBR program's ongoing operations of the program, at the same time advocating for sustainable supports for people with disability and their caregivers. The second approach they use to empower this formal support is mainstreaming. This mainstreaming means that including the agenda of these people with disabilities in every service agendas in the local governments, in the health sector, in the education sector, in every sectors that are available for the community, it concerns for people with disabilities at the same time. But due to budget problems, due to this stigma, social problem, that means different challenges, but those people with disability and their caregivers have been overlooked in in different services. So this program was advocating the mainstreaming of this agenda into the government services for these people with disabilities.
So would that look like something like at the local level, a preschool is going to be built, but making sure that children who are preschool age with disabilities are considered while that school is being built or while the curriculum is being developed, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Is that, yes, that's what I thought.
Including doing the accessibility things. Not only the CBR program doing those accessibilities, or rather influencing the school to build it by themselves, the school to make it accessible. In the health sectors, at the same time, providing health services for those persons with disabilities, and many of them have financial problems, so they are advocating for how they get free health services, free medical supporters. So this kind of thing is in every sector. There are a little details that need to be addressed, and based on the needs of those people with disabilities. So as you said, in a school setting, including the curriculum, the awareness in the school, and also the physical accessibility. So all those things are should be mainstream. That means they have to take the responsibilities. And when they do that way, it will be sustainable for people with disabilities.
Instead of being like a separate department in the government that just supports people with disabilities, it's built into every single unit. Okay, that's what I thought.
So this is the formal support aspects, but in the informal support aspects, this program, I found that three major initiatives that they implemented based on the cultural context of the community to create awareness in the society to build, to promote these natural supporters. The first one is coffee ceremony program. So this coffee ceremony program is just the neighbors come together and drink coffee together. It is not about the coffee. It is about just coming together. They discuss about different issues in the neighborhood. They discuss about, they share information. And also in that, at that time, the CBR workers come to that program and provide awareness creations about those people with disabilities and caregivers in the neighborhood. So this coffee ceremony program is organized in the community where people with disabilities are available. So they bring all those people with disabilities, their caregivers, the neighbors, friends, and around the area, and they have time together. So at that time, it helps them to accept those people with disability, minimize the stigma and discrimination, and of course, build mutual supports between those people with disability caregivers and the community around in that community. The second one is child-to-child program. The child-to-child program is designed mainly for children with disability and their peers at the same time in the neighborhood.
Kind of like a coffee chat, but for kids
without
the coffee.
So they came together, they bring all children around there, and they have time together, and then they empower those children without disability how to support those children with disabilities. When there is a situation that there is a mobility problem on a single individual with children with disability, they brought all the children with disabilities of their neighborhood and have time to play together in their houses. And also just give some times to create the environment to have to build their networks, mm-hmm. their relationship, their friendship, and mm-hmm. use that friendship from that to the school. So because mm-hmm. they attend in the same school because their villages are in the same area. So that support is not only in that the village, but they also support them in the school. They took mm-hmm. them to the school. For example, if there is a children with visual impairment, mm-hmm. they took that children with visual impairment, supported by without visual impairment, go to school. This kind of support. So this is the second program. And the third one is self-help group. This self-help mm-hmm. group is more organizing caregivers mm-hmm. of children with disabilities. So they support each other. Mm-hmm. They share information about their children's progress, how they function by themselves, and how they support their children with disabilities, and then how they could support. They share information together. At the same time, they also financially support each other. And the CBR program also formally support them to provide them loans to generate income together, and also promote saving habits between the caregivers. So this is the environment where the caregivers have their own time to discuss about their income generating, their awareness about their children with disabilities, and then how they will support their children with disabilities. So the three basic approaches are found in my study, mm-hmm. which are very important: promoting mutual supporters, the natural supporters, at the same time minimizing the stigma and discrimination mm-hmm. against those caregivers and children with disabilities in the society.
Oh, that is really impactful work, that it's you're gathering what's already being done. And can you tell us about what the role of these findings could be for the global community, especially in Canada? Because you mentioned that there's many different sites of your work. So, and your work is based in Ethiopia. So how does what you found there apply to other places and in Canada in particular?
Yeah, let me start from the contribution for mm-hmm, Ethiopia, mm-hmm. for example. As I mentioned, that we have to build the resources, the assets mm-hmm. that are found in the community. So we have to investigate more about those resources mm-hmm. in the society and find the approaches that we leveraged or promoted more of the natural supporters in the community for these people. And also it will contribute for the policy analysis, but I mean for policy development, mm-hmm. considering these assets in the society. And when we consider in the policy aspect this thing is we can develop strategies in guidelines and how we formally promote these natural supporters in the community, instead of only focusing on the negative aspect, the challenges, the discrimination and the stigmas against those people with disabilities and their families. So to the global community, especially for Canada, just in terms of disability related formal supporters, probably Canada is better than Ethiopia in terms of providing this formal supporters for those people with disabilities and maybe for their caregivers as well. However, there are studies that indicate the need is for intervention in terms of natural supports. This context is focusing on the formal supporters to what extent, or the supporters from the government side, or maybe the non-governmentals, but that's also formal supporters provide for those people with disabilities and their caregivers. So the experience of the Ethiopian context, especially the natural supporters, how the community could provide supporters to people with disability would be one experience that the Canadians would learn to promote in the Canadian context. If those people with disability and their caregivers in Canadian context need those natural supporters, they have to access those natural supporters. So in order to access those natural supporters, the community should be aware about how those natural supporters could be provided or how they could be promoted in the society. So using culturally appropriate contexts and adapting those kind of approaches from the global, that means in Ethiopian contexts, and trying to apply these approaches and adapting in this context and working on interventions to promote these natural supporters, especially as already there is an interest. Already there are different studies that shows that this natural support is still needed for those people with disabilities, because our everyday activity may not be covered by the formal support, may not be covered by the government or the service, the formal services. We need people in everyday interaction in our everyday activities. So this could be that means the approaches from the Ethiopian context could be adapted in culturally appropriate way of in the Canadian context, and learn what are the type of supports that the community would provide for those people with disability. Is I think the lesson is that the global community, especially the Western societies, those who more focusing on the formal support could learn from this informal supports of the natural supports in Ethiopia.
Oh, no, that sounds like, well, Canada, I think, has a much more individualistic culture, it sounds like, than the kind of interdependence and community focus that you've described in the Ethiopian context. So like you said, finding the strategies that work really well in the Ethiopian context and adapting them here in a way that makes sense for a different cultural, like you said, a different cultural context. But there's, I'm sure, lots that could be done.
For example, I myself, I'm a person with disability. When I came to Canada, the first thing that I noticed is the individualistic lifestyle. Because I, in Ethiopia, I have a lot of natural supports there. I have friends who always trying to support me when I need them. I have families, they even including the extended families, thus, who are always there to support me. And I have neighbors, if I need them, that are available to support me. But here, when I came to Canada in 2022, it was a challenging moment for me until I understand the lifestyle is here, because there is no informal support. I don't know my neighbors.
You might not even know their names, right?
And in, even it is difficult to ask supporters, just always thinking about the formal supporters available here if I need. But it doesn't mean that always 100% that formal support fulfill my needs. So I, even as an international student, as a person with disability, I feel it that natural support is always important everywhere in our daily activities. It doesn't mean that formal supporters are, I mean, substituted by natural supporters. We need the formal supporters, but there are areas that we need the natural supporters that the formal supporters may not fulfill.
You need both, right?
Yes. We need both,
And they complement one another.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't think, for example, the emotional labor that the natural supports can do, I don't know if that can be provided from an organization, right? That type of friendship or emotional labor. I don't know if that can come, or if you even want that from a formal support, right? Necessarily. So
yes,
we need both.
Yeah.
Well, it has been so great chatting with you. Thank you so much for doing the show, and best of luck with the rest of your research. It sounds like you have so much to work with. And I hope the rest of your dissertation goes really well.
Thank you very much.
We'd love to have you back to hear about how the rest of your dissertation wraps up. So do let us know in the future.
Yes, I will. Thank you very much.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download this show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. And until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.